Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It is a Friday. It is a new year, 2021. Glad that last one was over. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Feel very fortunate. Almost feel like I escaped 2020. Joy Taylor is joining us. It's been crazy. But it has given me sort of a rejuvenated belief in most Americans. I feel like it was the craziest year of my life, and my family and my friends' families, we've all gotten through it, and a lot of chaos, kind of an instigator in the White House, wasn't lubricating it, was sort of agitating it, and that's going to end, and I think we're in a good space, and wherever you sit politically, it's like a little less anxiety in a day-to-day basis from our government, a little less anxiety day-to-day from our world, and hopefully we're in a better space. I'm hoping we are in a better space.
Oh, hope is what we got right now.
That's what we have.
We made it through 2020, and that's an achievement in itself. So
I can't believe how many people texted me at midnight or 9 Pacific last night. I was in bed at 8:55, and my phone exploded.
Oh, I stayed up for, well, obviously for the East Coast New Year, but I stayed up till midnight here.
Good for here?
Yeah.
Wow.
I took a nice long nap during the day, so that kind of helped me. Let me stay up, but I still got a good solid like 5.5 hours. I'm good.
All right. Blazing Five. All of our odds are presented by FoxBet. I've never had a losing season. Blazing Five. I'm one game under 500. We got to win 3 games this week minimum. Hopefully 4. Here we go.
That's a hot one.
Let's blaze it up.
Fire it up.
It's Collins Blazing Five. Cowboys at Giants.
Cowboys at Giants. I've gone back and forth. I'm going to take New York plus 1.5. I think this is a go either way game, but here's why I think the value's with the Giants. Listen, the Dallas defense is improved in the last month, but it's still shaky. It's next to last or last in points. They're down rushing defense. They've allowed 30-plus points in 8 games, 120 points off turnovers, most in the NFL. But here's what I like. Jason Garrett, the former Cowboy coach, has really done a good job with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones hasn't had an interception in his last 5 starts. Nobody knows the Cowboys personnel like the Giants offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett. They're at home. They can still get in. They're both playing for the same thing. I think the value is on the Giants side. I'm going to take them to win 24 to The Giants, I'm going to have winning 24-23. Giants winning. Take the Giants and the points.
Saints at Panthers.
I'm going to take Carolina plus 6.5. This is an easy one. It's an in-division game. Carolina's got no quit. Young coach, young roster. They are fighting to the end. They want to cap this season off. And the Saints defense has been a little creaky in the last 3 games, giving up 171 yards rushing per game. The Panthers are 4-1 in their last 5 against the spread. They have 8 losses by just 1 possession. Teddy Bridgewater played great in Week 7 against his former teammates. New Orleans is the better team. That is not the question. 6.5 is a lot of points for a rivalry game for a smart young coach, a veteran quarterback, and a young team getting better. Panthers cover, but the Saints win 30-27.
Titans at Texans.
I don't call for blowouts much. I'm going to take the Titans minus 7.5 to blow out the Texans. I think the Texans have quit, and there's some numbers here that lead me to believe that. Their defense allowed 370 passing yards to Brandon Allen last week. They're on a 4-game losing streak. They're 5-10 against the spread, worse lately. And their defense doesn't take the ball away, meaning Ryan Tannehill's going to be comfortable. Do you know there's 1 of 3 teams averaging 30 points a game this season? The Packers, the Chiefs, the Titans are the other team. People forget about that because they've been so inconsistent. We don't love Ryan Tannehill like Aaron and Mahomes. This is a powerful offense. Again, a team that I think has just quit. I'm going to take the Titans winning in blowout fashion, 36-26.
Seahawks at 49ers.
Again, 49ers plus 6.5 is the play. George Kittle is back. Here's what the game comes down. San Francisco still, if you look at the numbers this year, is a top five defense in the NFL in the stuff that matters. Third down percentage, passing yards allowed, total yards per game. But their third down defense is the best in the NFL. And Seattle's offense is struggling to identify itself. Russell Wilson has 14 giveaways in the last 10 games. Only Drew Lock has more. So Seattle's the better team here. Nobody disputes that. But you look at their defense playing well. Robert Saleh, the coordinator, still trying to impress people and get a head coaching job. So that defense, they are playing hair on fire. A Seattle offense struggling to find itself. I think it's really a close football game. Seattle wins, but the Niners cover 24-23.
Washington at Eagles.
I think this is an obvious one. Philadelphia plus 2.5. I think they win the game outright. First of all, Doug Peterson may be coaching for his job. He's 8-4 against the spread as a home underdog. They play well as a home dog. Also, Washington's awful when Alex Smith doesn't play, and he's only doing individual drills this week. When Alex Smith plays, Washington's 10-5. When he doesn't, they're 6-26. And we talk about the Washington defense. We forget Philadelphia is one of only five teams in the NFL with over 45 sacks. Fletcher, Cox is great. Their secondary is a little banged up, but I don't think Washington can take advantage of it. I think Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts is averaging 440 yards of offense. Carson Wentz was averaging 120 yards less. They are simply more dynamic. I think he gets better every week. I think Philadelphia wins this game, 27-20. And for more on my Blazing 5 picks, check out the Fox Bet social platforms. Again, I have the Giants beating the Cowboys in that first one, 24-23. So we have two great college football games after our show today. And Joel Klatt is our lead Fox college football analyst, the former Colorado quarterback, joining us now. I defended Notre Dame earlier. I said, listen, if I have to hear all these SEC fans when Notre Dame loses today complain, well, Florida has lost seven straight to Alabama by 22 points on average. Georgia hasn't beaten them in a decade. You know who doesn't struggle with Alabama or the SEC? Clemson, who was 9-1 against the SEC, not named Bama. So my takeaway today is I do think Notre Dame loses kind of big. But I see it as such a good, great year for Notre Dame. That's my perspective. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think too often in college football, we set the standard as just Bama or Clemson. And if you're not at that standard, you're no good. And I would argue that that's not a good spot to be in for the sport overall. I think Notre Dame has had a terrific year. They really have. They've overcome some injuries. I know their defense has played, I think, better than they have in the past. They're more physical. I think Ian Book has had a good year. Heck, they beat Clemson. I don't care who wasn't on the field for Clemson in that ball game. They won. And I got to tell you, I think that they might play better than people expect, because for me, they're just kind of pit into a corner. No one giving them any shot. All the accolades going on to Alabama, all the All-Americans and the Heisman finalists and everything. Wouldn't shock me at all if Notre Dame came out and played really hard and this was a closer game than people expect.
Let me talk about Clemson, Ohio State. I think this is competitive. I don't love Clemson's offensive line, except for the left tackle. He's really good. But the rest of the offensive line, I've seen him in spots. They get pushed around a little bit. They're not dominating. And I do think Chase Young's not there. They don't have the alpha this year, the dominating player, but they've got NFL bodies. I think this is kind of ugly. Choppy. I don't think it's as dynamic. I think Trevor Lawrence feels a lot of pressure. My gut is that Clemson wins, but I think Ohio State, I think they have a lot of advantages. I think Clemson could be looking to Bama. I think Clemson's coach poked Ohio State in the ribs.
Yeah.
I think it's close today. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I do think it's close. And I'm going to pick Clemson. I think it's really... They just have the better quarterback, and I know Fields is very good, and we might talk about him in a moment, but he's not playing near the level of what Trevor Lawrence is playing right now. And so for that reason and the way that the secondary for Ohio State has played this season, I think Lawrence might have a big game. Now, having said that, you're exactly right about the Clemson offensive line. It's one of the reasons why they've had to be so creative in the way that they get the ball to Travis Etienne during the course of the year. In fact, during the Miami game way earlier in the season, you know, in the first half, in order to get him more touches, they threw him 8 screen passes just in the first half, 8 wow. different screen passes. So they've got to create ways for him to be effective. One of the ways that they create to be effective in the run game is letting Trevor Lawrence run the football. And remember in the second half last year in that semifinal game, Lawrence's legs were really the difference in the game. That structure of defense that Ohio State plays, and it's somewhat unique because they play with 3 corners on the field and only 1 safety. But because of that middle close single safety look that they play with almost on every snap, they are susceptible to the quarterback run. Lawrence was able to exploit that late in the in that game last year, and that's what got everything going for them. I think that they might go quarterback run early, try to get some big plays and explosive plays in that run game and try to open some things up. I think Clemson wins the games, but you're exactly right. That front 7 for Ohio State, that's the key. If the secondary can eliminate explosive plays and put the game in the hands of the front 7, that's going to be Ohio State's best chance.
Listen, I think occasionally you get an Elway and Andrew Luck, a Trevor Lawrence, and they're transcendent. They're going to succeed eventually. But I look at Justin Fields and I think, you know, his success is going to depend largely on where he lands. Bad coach, he'll struggle. But he the last 2 games I've watched him, he's not been very good. And I think timeout. NFL coaching is generally way better than college coaching. And I think some of this is COVID.
You think so? Wait. You think so?
Well, Spurrier bombed in the NFL. Saban struggled in the NFL.
Well, but I don't know if that means that they're not as good of coach. I think Ryan Day is one of the best quarterback coaches out there.
So what if Justin Fields struggles today? Am I to think, you know, I'm not picking him. He's just struggling. What am I to say if he struggles?
That's a good question. And he has. You're exactly right. He struggled late down the stretch of the season. I think there's been a couple of different factors. First, I think he has pressed. I think that he wanted badly to win a Heisman Trophy and do all of the things that he came back to do and fought to get back on the field to do. And then you also had games in which he was totally depleted as far as his resources. Remember, he played Michigan State without 3 starting offensive linemen. He didn't have his head coach on the sideline, who's normally his play caller. Then in the Big Ten championship game, he was down his leading receiver, Chris Olave, the wide receiver coach, Brian Hartline. They weren't on the sideline. This team has played shorthanded the entire back half of the season, and I think that has been reflected in Fields' play. I think he's pressed because of that. If he stays within himself, he's very good, but he has, at least this year, shown a couple of things that worry me for the future. One, he holds the ball far too long, and he locks onto 1 receiver for far too long. That's going to have to change, and that's going to have to develop for him in the NFL because you just don't succeed doing that at the next level. He's immensely talented, there's no doubt. But I have heard whispers in the scouting arena that other quarterbacks are starting to gain traction and momentum as the guys that might be selected as the second quarterback off the board in next spring's NFL draft because of those struggles we're mentioning here from Fields in the back half of the year.
So, listen, I believe, and I've had a couple tips. I've made a couple calls to athletic directors I know, and they always take my call because of my great influence and reach.
That's right. Very, very big influence. Huge. Big J journalism.
I'm like an avalanche of journalism. I just keep coming down the hill. So I've called these athletic directors, and I've proposed the idea that because of shortfalls economically in COVID, the answer is only – an 8-team playoff. It generates hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion.
I love when you pass off my ideas as your own.
Okay.
I told you that in September.
Well, you suggested it. I didn't really buy it. And then I did my own homework. And then...
Oh, is that right? Oh,
you suggested this. You submitted to me it's possible. And I do think, and I called 2 athletic directors, and they're like, he's probably right. So we regrettably had to admit you were probably right. So my point being, if it happens, everybody's going to say, oh, this is going to give Coastal Carolina, BYU, Cincinnati. And I said, no, it's not. I said, here's the 8 teams that are going to dominate the college football playoff, and here they are. Clemson, okay. Bama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Georgia, Notre Dame, Oregon, Florida. 1,
only Ryan Day to me would leave for the NFL. I think all eight of these coaches are good, and they have a presence, and they can recruit, and they're not going anywhere. Saban may retire, but that's about it. So
yeah, I was just going to say, of those coaches, you may get Cristobal out of Oregon if there's a big enough job in the SEC. And then you may have Ryan Day go to the NFL.
Yes.
And I don't think in 5 years Nick Saban's the head coach at Alabama. I think that head coach is going to be Steve Sarkisian, their offensive coordinator. I think I believe they've agreed for him to be coach in waiting already.
Wow.
And that he's just waiting for Nick Saban here in the next 2 or 3 years. But back to your list, I don't disagree except for maybe one. Let me just push back on one. And I understand, and you talk about the avalanche of criticism when I'm going to bring up this next program. I would replace Florida with Texas. And the reason is because I don't buy the culture at Florida. And the evidence was two nights ago.
Bad.
When Dan Mullen and that team should be ashamed of the effort that was on the field. At some point, and remember, this is a guy a few years ago that went on that rant in a press conference about, oh, you play for the Gators and the guy next to you and you got to have some pride. Well, where was the pride two nights ago? It was nowhere to be found. I don't care who wasn't on the field. The guys that were on the field gave a lackluster at best effort. I would borderline call it, you know, a pathetic effort from Florida in that game. So I don't know about the long-term culture at Florida. I do know that the recruiting at Texas, and more specifically, Colin, that true freshman running back, Bijan Robinson, is unbelievable. And if they start giving him the ball 15, 20 times a game next year, watch out. And they've recruited at a high level. Tom keeps his job. They can retain some of that momentum. They'll be in the second year of offensive coordinator Mike Yurcich. They'll be in the second year of defensive coordinator Chris Ash, who has made them a much better defense. I would replace Florida with Texas on that list.
All right. I'm rooting for that because I do like some geographical symmetry, and I think the sport leans too far to the south, even though, you know, mm-hmm. I watch SEC every week, so I'm not complaining about it, but I just think the reality of our jobs is we need SC to be good. We need Texas to be good. It's good when Notre Dame's good. It's good when Ohio State and the Big Ten are good. It balances.
And we need a West Coast presence, by the way. Yeah. Desperate for a West Coast presence, you know, whether that's Oregon or USC. And the problem is that league has gone out there in bowl season and just gotten absolutely obliterated.
By the way, let's go back to this. Are you sure you suggested there'll be an 18 playoff, or did I suggest it to you?
I said to you almost verbatim. I said to you almost verbatim that the reason that the playoff is going to expand and soon is monetarily. It's not about fairness or who gets in or who doesn't get in. But when you have a budget shortfall somewhere between 40% and 65% across college football, the only money tree in the sport is expanding the playoff. You know, your parents always said like, hey, there's not a money tree in the backyard. Well, for college football, there is. And it's called expanding the playoff because our network and any other network will be clamoring to try to pay for those games, to air those games because they're the most meaningful games. And so that – in order to recoup some of the money lost through COVID and not having fans in the stands, they're going to have to expand the playoff just for that reason alone.
All right, I'll acknowledge it may have been your idea first, but I think my expansive commentary on it after was quite interesting.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't disagree. You're an interesting, you're most interesting man in sports radio and television for that.
Okay. Happy holidays to the amazing Joel Klatt and his beautiful family. And we love having you on the show. And, you know, come up to L.A. County once in a while. And if the old restaurants are open, we'll have a coffee.
I would love to do that. Hopefully soon. Happy New Year to everybody, including you, Joy, the entire staff. I love coming on the show. I'm in Colorado right now visiting some family, so I couldn't come up. But you guys are the best. Thank you.
Great guy, Joel Klatt. Good stuff. All right, Eric Mangini's around the corner as well. Mark Helfrich coached Oregon. Remember years ago, I think it was Ohio State they played in the national championship game in Dallas. Memory could be, you know, floating out there. Jason McIntyre, too. Don't go anywhere. Live in Los Angeles. Happy holidays, everybody. Happy New Year. It's The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
The final Sunday of the regular season kicks off with the Cowboys in a must-win game against the Giants. Then the Bears try to win their way into the playoffs against the Packers squad gunning for the top seed in the NFC or other regional action. Check local listings for the games in your area only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
I went back and forth on the Giants-Cowboys. I said all week I think it's going to be really close. I'm going to take the Giants to win 24-23. And I really do think the difference is that often criticized Jason Garrett, the former Cowboy coach, comes over to the Giants, doesn't get a preseason. Joe Judge, he learns Joe Judge. And I think if you look at Daniel Jones over the course of the season and what Jason Garrett's done with Colt McCoy and Daniel Jones, they've both gotten better. And I think it's a credit. Daniel Jones was a kind of a turnover-plagued mess to start the year. But, again, these new coaching staffs, these young quarterbacks, we just got to realize September, October, you were just making stuff up. You just didn't have the resources of the time together. So there you go. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, there's not a whole lot going on in L.A. right now. Stay home. But
cold.
At least today we get a lot of college football. And the first one is Notre Dame, a huge underdog to Alabama.
Yeah.
Yahoo Sports surveyed 10 coaches and scouts that have either studied or faced these teams this year.
Okay.
And they're not expecting it to be pretty. One veteran assistant said Alabama is going to kill them. Another said they don't think Notre Dame will get obliterated, but believes the score will be something like 42-21, which is
kind of obliterated.
Still close to obliteration. Fox Bet has Alabama favored by 19.
Let me give you Notre Dame. One thing Notre Dame has. They have faced Clemson twice. Clemson and Alabama have the same physical similarities, NFL bodies. So Alabama is not going to be shocked at the physicality of Alabama. Alabama's got an NFL quarterback, so is Clemson. Alabama's got NFL running back, so does Clemson. They both have NFL defensive front sevens. So I do think Notre Dame's like, fellas, we've played Alabama twice. We know what it's like. It's really difficult. But I think a few years ago, Notre Dame played Alabama and hadn't played anybody close to them and got behind like the Manti Te'o team, like 35-0 or something. That won't shock them. Now, what will shock them is how good Alabama's wide receivers are, and I don't think anybody in college football can cover all of them.
Well, I think everyone's apprehension is how they looked against Clemson last time.
Right.
So, you know, if you're losing 34-10 to Clemson with Trevor Lawrence, as we all know what happened without Trevor Lawrence, that's really the concern.
But Clemson had lost to Notre Dame. It was hard to get the Notre Dame players up to play Clemson again. Clemson players had a lot more, you know.
I don't have, even though I still think that both of these games are going to be a blowout, I'm going to lean more towards the Clemson-Ohio State isn't as much of a blowout. I don't know what Notre Dame has for this team. I mean, they're just so dominant. I'm with you. They do have the experience of playing Clemson twice, and Clemson is obviously, you know, 1A to Alabama.
Yeah.
But who knows? Like, to Joel Klatt's point, nobody's giving them a chance.
Right.
So it could be one of those miracle games. That's what college football is great for, is awesome stories. So we'll see. Either way, all of us are going to be watching.
Yeah.
So like most people in 2020, Cam Newton had a difficult year from getting released by Carolina and struggling on the field with New England, missing his family throughout the season. He had to overcome a lot. And he reflected on what he's been through and how he has grown in 2020.
I've learned to be optimistic, especially throughout these trials and tribulations. I don't want to see no part of 2020, but it made me a better person. That I do believe, and that's something. Being a part of this franchise is something that you just don't wash away that stench, you know, that aura of being a patriot. You know, it's something that's in you.
He said it was the hardest thing was being away from his kids. He also struggled with free agency, adjusting to the Boston media, filling Tom Brady's shoes, about with COVID.
Oh, it's been brutal.
The team having a bad year. He said it's all taught him to be patient and resilient.
I think that's great because he's got nothing to work with. He's replacing a goat. The division's significantly better than anything Tom faced. Let's be honest. This is the best Buffalo and Miami have been concurrently in 20 years.
Yes.
So, it nothing has gone his way, and Edelman got hurt. So, the only dependable...
You had 8 opt-outs.
So, that nobody, including Brady wouldn't have won with this team.
That's why Brady left.
Well, he would have lost to Buffalo twice. He would have lost to Miami. I mean, it just, this is bad. I'm not, Cam drives me nuts, but this year, I got his back. He's been good. Good teammate.
I think that to Albert Breer's point earlier, the fact that he came in, so many people had questions about Cam, if he was even going to be able to get on the field. Was he going to beat out Jarrett Stidham? You know, did he have anything left in him at all? And then to go and to adjust to being a New England Patriot, which is, to his point, a completely different world than maybe anywhere else in the NFL, maybe anywhere else in sports. It's a very intense place for someone that most people consider to be very loose and selfish and not a team guy. Like, I think that, this whole year has really kind of changed how people think about Cam as a person, which really never should have been in question in the first place. But this is just one of those years. I don't know that he's going to end up in New England. I don't really see that happening, but I think he's going to end up signing somewhere as a really legitimate backup. I'm with you. He's a little bit too much of a star to be a backup quarterback, but I think that the way that things have gone this year on the field, it's a place that will work for him. And this year and a little bit of last year as well with the Saints have shown what kind of value having a backup quarterback with a lot of starting experience can have for a team that's a contender.
I mean, imagine if the Rams had to win this weekend to get in. It'd be over. I mean, seriously, Jared Goff, who never got hurt college or pro, broken hand. I mean, it may only be 1 week, but, I mean, what if Baker wasn't playing this week and they didn't have – you've got to have a backup quarterback.
You have to. So Sam Darnold could possibly be playing his last game with the Jets on Sunday, but he is hoping he can stay with the team and continue developing as a quarterback.
Yeah, I absolutely believe my best days are ahead. I know we all like to think of hypotheticals and what ifs, but I'm a Jet right now, and I love being here. I love the guys in the locker room, and I love going to work every single day here.
I mean, I don't know what else he's going to say. You know, it's not like he can get up there and be like, this year has been a disaster, our coach is a disaster, and well, I can't wait to get out of here.
Yeah, pretty good December. I mean, what if they win this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The Jets fans really love that, but I think this is all over.
It feels like,
and there's nothing wrong with that. There's no shame in that. This was not a good situation, especially the last year. If Gase is not going to get another head coaching job,
New England offered the Niners a second round pick, and they could take that money off their space because Garoppolo's got injuries, right? If New England came to you and said, "We'll give you a second round pick for Garoppolo," which is probably what he garners, and I get Sam Darnold and Garoppolo's contract off the books, a California kid who Lynch liked out of college, I think you'd have to consider it. Sam is very much a play-action quarterback. He's not your traditional sit back in a 3rd and 8. I think you give him Kittle and Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk in that running game. I think you'd have to strongly consider it if you were San Francisco.
I think it's probably the best move. I don't know if San Francisco is going to do it. But with Jimmy Garoppolo's injury history, I don't know how you don't at least bring in
And he's been hurt. That's a bad combo.
You have to have a solid backup.
You have to go and have coffee and discuss it.
I wish, but I don't know if the Jets would do it because it's an AFC team. But the Steelers have got to get somebody in there.
But Sam, but Ben is so dramatic. Ben pushed back on Mason Rudolph. I mean, that's the thing with Ben. The thing is, you know how it's like, you can tell when you have a divorce coming, you're like, oh, that won't end well. They're not the kind of couple that gets divorced gently. They'll throw pots and pans and furniture. Like, Ben and the Steelers, it just feels like it'll be bumpy.
But it's just...
like Marino and the Dolphins at the end.
You're right. Like, it's not going to be smooth. But they need to get somebody in there.
Oh, there's no question.
And I'm not saying Ben's going to retire next year or even the year after that. But, like, what's the future of the franchise?
And Sam's got some Ben in him. He's a little reckless. He ad-libs sometimes to fault. So.
Yeah, and I don't know that the Jets would do it because it's an AFC team. At least if you're sending Sam Darnold to the NFC and the Niners, it makes more sense. But Pittsburgh needs to do something.
I love the NFL. Just all the rumors and gossip. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Fox Sports Radio's ultimate tailgate rigged sweepstakes. A Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. These things are beautiful. 6 TVs, 2 wood pellet grills, swivel chairs. So nice. Go to foxsportsradio.com. You can enter until January 24th. Fox Sports Radio's ultimate tailgate rigged sweepstakes. Eric Mangini around the corner on a Friday next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
One of my favorite guys, Browns Jets head coach, three rings with the Patriots, Eric Mangini. Thank God we hired him, Fox Sports NFL analyst. He is now joining us live. So many questions today. We got college football, but I want to get into the NFL with you right now on the Chiefs. So I do think it matters. You know, New England last year was struggling in December. They went in a playoff game and they lost. I think it matters. I think, and now Patrick Mahomes is not going to play week 17. Then he's going to have a bye. His last game against Atlanta, he was off. Eric, I don't love that. I 20 days off for even Mahomes. Yeah. Isn't that seem extreme?
Yeah, I don't love it either. But we have this debate every year. When we used to have a preseason, it was always, do you play guys in the fourth preseason game? And then you get to the end of the year, and it's, do you play guys in these last this last game? If it's meaningless, and everybody has different opinions on the rust versus rest, but you look at quarterbacks who have been out that last game and then had the bye, and they haven't been very successful. I remember when the Colts went 14-2, they tried to do a hybrid thing and played Peyton Manning like three snaps. That didn't work out really well for him. And Mahomes now is coming off a stretch where his quarterback numbers are good, but they're low, and it's the lowest he's been. Well, he's been under 100, what, I think the last four games.
Yeah.
Didn't play great against Miami, didn't play great against Atlanta, and it's hard. You amp it up preseason to regular season, and then you amp it up again regular season to the playoffs, and you've got 3 weeks off, and suddenly you're in that, you know, that higher intensity. It's hard. It's hard to do.
You know, it's interesting. Let's say Dallas wins, gets to the playoffs. You know, I've said this before. Dak's better than Andy Dalton, but the numbers don't lie currently, and they don't lie their first 4 years in the league when they both had support. I don't think the gap's massive. If Dallas snuck into the playoffs, could they be trouble? I mean, the weapons on the – I mean, they have offensive personnel, Eric.
Yeah, with Andy Dalton, I'm with you. Is Dak Prescott $28 million better than Andy Dalton? It doesn't look like it. Andy had a really successful early part of his career. And what would Andy Dalton have been with those Dallas teams that Dax played with? And you watch him play now, and you see the comfort level in the system. They've hung 30-plus on the last three opponents. I could see him doing it against the Giants. Now they're riding a four-game win streak with an offense that's dangerous and gelling. They could easily make some noise in the playoffs. And you want to be hot as you go into it. And they're going to be hot going into the playoffs if they somehow find a way to get in.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You know, it's like Andy Dalton. There's not a lot of sex appeal to it. He doesn't have the big arm. He doesn't run around a lot. He's not American hero. But, you know, there is something to be said. He's the point guard who pass. He's a pass first instead of a shoot first point guard. And we all love the Westbrooks and the Kyrie Irvings. But there is something to be said when you have a great receiving core. He's a good passer of the football. He's a nice distributor. He gets it out. He gets it out early. That's what I see.
Yeah, he's a smart, experienced guy. And he's not sexy in terms of the way that he plays. But to some degree, Dak isn't either. It's not like he's making a lot of wild plays when he plays. And Dallas is going to have a pretty interesting decision in the offseason if they do make the playoffs and Dalton continues to play well. It's a pretty significant difference in salary. It's actually a massive difference in salary. And we'd have to pay these two guys.
Yeah. So you know Tom Brady well. I don't see them as a team that's going to go on a playoff roll. They have beaten bad teams all year. They have struggled against good teams. But it's funny, I said the other day, when Peyton Manning went to Denver at 36 years old and with a less dysfunctional organization, Denver just made the playoffs, he lost in the playoffs, but I think we kind of all looked at it and thought, what a move by Peyton, what a move by Denver, this was a successful year. Brady's 43 to a completely dysfunctional organization with no preseason due to a pandemic, and I look at it and I think, if he lost in the playoffs, It worked. It was successful. Your thoughts on Brady and the Bucs in the playoffs, and what if he does lose? How will you view it?
Yeah, I've struggled with the way this has been handled from the beginning. I feel like if you're going to bring a 43-year-old guy in who's not mobile, whose greatest strength is his mind, you do what he's most comfortable with from the beginning. You don't have. It's not that he can't learn. but you don't have him thinking if his greatest asset is his understanding of what's happening. And you hear them talk about getting Mike Evans 1,000 yards and how that's an important milestone going into the last game of the season. It doesn't make sense to me. Why is that important? It's a nice to have, but you said it. There's an element of disconnect that's going on, and I know they're talking about Super Bowl or bust, but making the playoffs and you know, if they can get a win in the playoffs, I think that's success for the way this is all gone down.
So I know yesterday Greg Cosell was on and he talked about Lamar Jackson and he said, listen, he's got 44 touchdowns, no interceptions in the red zone. They're great on third down. He's a headache situationally. And, you know, it's funny. I look at them in the playoffs last year, and Lamar's an MVP, and it felt like, oh, Baltimore's got a role. And now I look at them, and I think, I wouldn't want to play Baltimore. I'm not sure what the expectations are. Your thoughts about them as a playoff team?
You don't want to play Baltimore. It's like playing those teams that run the wing T in college football, or the, you know, they've got a scheme that nobody else is running. What Baltimore does is so unique, and it's so difficult to deal with. And the fact that they're going into the playoffs, and they'll be on a roll. I think they'll be, what, four straight or five straight wins if they go in. So they're be red hot. Lamar doesn't have all the pressure that he had last year.
He doesn't.
The MVP, they had the number one seed. They're playing with house money. They do something that nobody else does, and they can eat up huge chunks of the clock, which means all those high-powered offenses and all those great quarterbacks, they're sitting watching as Baltimore just slowly grinds away at you. And it's a rough package to have to deal with if you're getting ready for them.
Yeah, and I love what you said. It's not the same. There is no pressure on Lamar this year. Last year it was the MVP. You got to win. And listen, we all react differently to pressure. This year he's better. He's played against more defenses. He's clearly improving, and there's no pressure. So the Packers lose David Bakhtiari, left tackle. He's a great pass-blocking left tackle. I think he grades number one, has been for the last several years. Listen, the Ravens offense has been better without Ronnie Stanley, and we all know Ronnie Stanley's unbelievable, maybe the best left tackle in the AFC. Back, David Bakhtiari, what would you do as a coach? Khalil Mack into town, here we are, no left tackle. Like, Green Bay does develop offensive linemen pretty good. I mean, what's the gap, Bakhtiari to a left tackle? What do you do if you're Green Bay for the next month without a Hall of Fame first ballot left tackle?
Yeah, well, look, it's terrible to have an injury at this point in the season, especially at left tackle, and especially with a quarterback that's more of a pocket passer than not. But the nice thing about Aaron Rodgers is he can get out, and they can move the pocket if they want to. And what this game does allow them to do is to continue to try different types of protection packages. You bring the tight end over there, he can help the left tackle. You bring the back over there, he can chip on the pass rusher with the left tackle. You can slide the line over in that direction. There's a lot of things that you can do to help one guy. Now, it takes away some resources from other spots, but Aaron Rodgers is going to be conscious of it. Aaron Rodgers is experienced enough to know when he's going to be weak due to protection and the vulnerabilities. So I think if it had to happen to someone, you know, it happened to him is probably the least impactful.
Finally, you're in Ohio and Cleveland. Big game for Baker this weekend. I do think they'll probably win. Overall, look at his season. What do you expect to the next couple of weeks going forward for Baker Mayfield?
Well, here's my frustration with the Browns. And I love Kevin Stefanski, but I don't know how you throw the ball 53 times when you've got no receivers and you've got two running backs that are arguably the best tandem in the league. That doesn't make any sense. And I think the Browns' best chance to win, not just this week, but also win the playoffs, is if it's the Cleveland Browns featuring Baker Mayfield, not starring Baker Mayfield.
Ah.
Rely on the offensive line, rely on the running backs, and then Baker plays that much better. Take the pressure off of him. Do not make him the focal point of this offense. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't work. I mean, if you look at the numbers,
it doesn't work.
It just simply doesn't work. All right, Eric, you have yourself a great holiday. Happy New Year to you and
Happy
your family.
New Year.
And it's great seeing you again.
Good to see you too, Colin. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you know, the Lamar Jackson thing is really interesting. He's a situational quarterback nightmare. Greg Cosell was on yesterday talking about, and I just asked him straight out, like, you look at film. I don't look at film like you do. You look at film. When you look at film of Lamar Jackson, especially late in the year this year, what, Greg Cosell, does the film say?
One area in which they're so good, Colin, is the red zone. And when you score touchdowns in the red zone, you know, I was researching for a piece I did for my matchup show this week on Lamar in the red zone. The last two seasons, he has 44 touchdown passes and no interceptions in the red zone. And they are really, really good with pass game concepts in the red zone.
And I know it. Everybody says, Colin, he is 0-2 in the playoffs. This is when I like being 50. John Elway was 0-2 in the playoffs when he was young. And Peyton Manning was 0-3 in the playoffs and lost 41-0 to the Jets. They're kids. They're like 23 years old. They don't. It's just like you just have to understand. This time there's no pressure. You know, it's what we do. Anything that looks different or plays different. And I'll be honest. I said with Kyler Murray, I'm like, nope, doesn't look right. He's too small. Does not look right. And then by the second game, I'm like, oh, I was wrong on that. It looks right. So I think you forget this with Lamar. Is that he played in a really bad college conference, the ACC. He didn't face a lot of great teams. He had an NFL coach, Bobby Petrino, so that helped him. But he came in incredibly young. I think he's still younger than Joe Burrow. So you just got to give these guys time. All I know is when I watch Baltimore play and you tell me he can't throw, I watched them against the Colts defense in the second half. I thought he was great. He was 10 for 10. I think he has touch. Here's a nice throw. I think he has touch. I don't think outside the sidelines he's ever going to be Aaron Rodgers. Aaron's never going to run like this. So I think we always look at what players don't have. I think with Lamar, you have to look. He's the world's fastest quarterback. And that enhances his passing game, especially if he's throwing on second and three or third and one. You don't know what they're going to do. And that opens up major holes because linebackers, you have to be so honest with him. You have to just hold and wait. And the Baltimore does a great job. Greg Roman, John Harbaugh, a great job building an offense. You can't even practice for him. There's nobody on your roster that plays like him. Hour three coming up.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.